From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in January when Rochester City Councilmember Elaine Spall announced that she would not be seeking re-election. Spall has held the seat in Council's East District for 11 years, and her departure has sparked interest from five candidates hoping to lead the district. Voters will see five names on the ballot during the June 25th primary, and this hour we're talking to each of the candidates about their priorities, not only for the district, but for the city of Rochester. And throughout this campaign season, you know, we're less than 2 weeks away from a primary. It's happening right here in the summer. Throughout this campaign season, we've been trying to bring all of the candidates for you right here on Connections to talk at length about these issues. And in some ways, if you do not live in the city of Rochester, your first instinct might think, well, you know, it's a city council race in a city I don't live in. But the health of this city is important for everyone in this region, and council will have a lot to do, especially in the coming years. So this is a great chance to hear from the five candidates for this one seat, and we will introduce the candidates now. Hello to Mary Lupien, a teacher in the Rochester City School District and an activist. Mary, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Also with us is Wayne Harris, a retired deputy chief with the Rochester Police Department. Wayne, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Evan. It's good to be here.
Also with us is Stanley Martin, a project director for the Center for Community Alternatives and director at the Safer Monroe Area Reentry Team, known as SMART. Stanley, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Bryce Miller is president of Northeast Neighbors United and vice chair of the North Winton Village Association. Bryce, welcome to you.
Thank you, and thank you for having us.
And Michael Geraci is an attorney with Geraci Law Offices. Michael, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
There's five of you. There's a lot of people for one seat. That's a lot of interest, and as Mary Lupien said, coming in the door, that's democracy. And so here we are, less than 2 weeks away from the primaries, and I'm going to ask all of you right out of the gate to kind of just give a little bit of background about who you are, the work that you've done, and why you decided to seek this particular seat, and we'll just go around the table. I'll start with Mary. Go ahead, Mary.
Sure. I'm Mary Lupien. I am running because from being an activist and an educator, I can really see firsthand our community's serious systemic issues. And I'm involved actively with the organizations and the people that are creating solutions. And from that perspective, I can see how housing is in serious crisis and how our police need to be held accountable by the communities that they serve, and how transportation is a serious barrier for people to get to where they need to go. So I'm running to make headway on those issues and involve the community in those discussions and bring voices to the table.
Stanley Martin, I'll turn the microphone over to you. Tell us why you decided to seek this seat.
So I'm running to really address inequity head on in our community. My work and background is in community mental health counseling. I got my graduate degree from Warner School of Education and Human Development. And within that time, I worked as a counselor at the Monroe Correctional Facility, where I got to see how policies made at the top treetops really affected people at the bottom. I'm bringing in something different, wherein I'm coming in as a human services person. I'm not coming in as a business owner or an attorney. I'm coming in as someone who has served the people for years and who is ready to advocate for people. I'm also a very independent mind coming in, only supported by the people and not, you know, big developers or different organizations that have their own personal interest. So I'm running to really support the people and be for the people.
All right. Wayne Harris, tell us why you're running and a little bit more about your background.
So I spent 30 years working for the city of Rochester. I retired as the deputy chief of police after serving 30 years with the Rochester Police Department. But, you know, even while I was a police officer, I was active in the community. I've been on the advisory board for teen empowerment for a number of years. I've worked with the Rochester Youth Violence Partnership for about 6 years, which is a community health-based approach to youth that go into the hospital as a result of violent trauma. I'm on the board of directors for the Gandhi Institute for Nonviolence, and I'm also the national financial secretary for a group called NOBLE, which is the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives. So I've continually served and thought when Elaine decided not to seek re-election that here was another opportunity for me to continue to serve the city that I love. And I'm interested in the problems of poverty and education and how they are connected and all of the things that orbit areas with high levels of poverty. And I think I have a perspective to bring to the conversation that I'd like to share with the city of Rochester and help work some of those things out.
Okay. Bryce Miller.
Hi. The reason I decided to run for city council is I have been part of the North Winton Village Association board for about the last 10 years. I'm currently the vice chair of North Winton Village Association. I started NEMNU, north of East Main Neighbors United, with many other neighbors. The reason we had started was actually we had a crime problem in our area with a lot of home burglaries, and we all had come together and said we're going to take back our neighborhood and we're going to make sure we have a strong quality of life for every walk of life that lives in our neighborhood. Today I'm proud to say that we have been very successful in that, and we are a very safe neighborhood, and people are not afraid to have their kids go outside, ride a bike, take a walk even at night. You know, that wasn't something that really was going on before we started the association in 2011. As far as some of my personal background, I was 21 years old when I bought my house in the North Winton Village neighborhood in 2007, and I am the operations coordinator for Jaguar Land Rover in Penfield. I do think I can hit the ground running due to the fact of just my background in my neighborhood work, and I want to take that to a grander scale, and I think we need to get back down to the basics of truly putting neighbors back first in city council. I think we've gotten a little bit away from that, and I think it's really time that whoever gets elected on June 25th truly puts the neighbors in mind.
Okay. Mike Geraci.
Yes, good morning. So community service and community engagement is something that's really been instilled deeply in me since I was young. I can thank my family and community for that. And I remember being young, participating in things like Operation Clean Sweep, Project Clean Sweep, and helping to clean up the streets of our community and the streets of the East District that I hope to serve. That service has continued in my life, being a volunteer baseball coach for Eastside Little League, a mentor attorney for the Rochester Teen Court, and participating actively in leading several organizations which also seek to bring good and do good in our community. In fact, last night I was installed on the board of the Monroe County Bar Association Foundation, which is the charitable arm of the Bar Association, and we seek to support programs such as the diversity clerk training, the teen court, and other very important programs in our community. I am a practicing attorney, and in that capacity I advocate every day for clients, for people from all over the board, from all over our community, and I believe that everyone deserves strong advocacy. As a city council member, that is your primary goal and your primary duty is to advocate for your neighbors, and that's what I seek to bring to the council, and that's what I hope to serve.
Now, some of our guests this hour who are running for this council seat have brought up very specific issues that we're going to spend some time talking about this hour: transportation, police accountability, and more here. But I think it will be instructive for our listeners to hear all of you answer this question. Sometimes voters aren't always sure what power council has or what decisions or what hard calls you're going to have to make. So if you're elected, and we'll go back around the board here and ask all of you to kind of start with this, what do you think the most pressing issue facing city council is right now that you would have to address if you were elected? What is the most important and maybe the hardest call that you think council's got to make? Mike?
So I think clearly, and Wayne touched on this, poverty and our city school district are, you know, really the two issues in the public focus. Interestingly enough, the city council, we're not tasked to revamp the school district, but we are tasked with passing the budget, with scrutinizing those line items and making sure that we are putting our resources where they need to be in order to affect change in our school district. So, you know, addressing the poverty issue in our school district, they go hand in hand. Those are clearly the two primary issues. Here, we remember we are all seeking to represent our neighbors in the East District. Those are certainly very important, pressing issues as well. But now that I've been walking around for the past 6 months, knocking on hundreds of doors, meeting thousands of people, folks have other concerns as well. Neighborhood beautification, and again, making sure that that everyone has access to, you know, beautiful, safe, vibrant neighborhoods, and that we continue to build on really some of the growth we've seen in the East District over the past years, and certainly under the leadership of Councilwoman Spall.
And when you talk about schools, are you someone who wants to see a state takeover of the Rochester City School Board, Mike?
I am not in favor of a takeover of the city school board, and I'll explain why. I think that right now we are in an important time for change. We have the recommendations from the Distinguished Educator. We have the potential to see five new school board members elected in the coming year. And we have really an opportunity to build on some of the great successes that we've seen here, such as the East EPO, School 17, 23, 58, community schooling. We've seen successes. We can expand that into our other schools. We have the brains here. We have the passion. We have folks that want to serve and do this. So I don't believe to punt that to Albany and bring in a whole new set of people is the answer at this point. I really think that we are at a crux and at an important time for change, and I really am optimistic and believe we can do it. We have seen slow growth in the graduation rate. We've seen some reduction in suspensions. That's progress. It's not as much progress as we would like, but we are making progress.
Bryce Miller, the most important call and the top issue facing council in the city of Rochester right now.
I think we have a lot in common. I think poverty in our schools are very important in the city of Rochester. In a sense, they go hand in hand because we need to make sure that we raise our communities out of poverty wherever we can, because a lot of these children, I believe, feel left behind. They get to school and they have so many problems at home that it's very difficult for them to get the education that they deserve in school as well, because there's just so many outside influences going on that are out of their control. They're innocent kids. I also feel that obviously quality of life is very important in our city as well. Like Mike had said, going around from neighbor to neighbor, every district has its own set of issues. Obviously, we have to work for the whole city and build bridges from district to district. But neighbors are concerned about quality of life issues, safety issues, making sure that their neighbors who may be elderly have the right resources in place to keep their homes intact, because these houses are averaging 100 years old and they're not getting any newer, and they need to last for 100 plus extra years. I also think that another issue pressing the city is I think city council and the school board need to learn how to work together a little bit better.
State takeover, yes or no?
No. I do not think there should be a state takeover, but I do think what kind of takeover we can have is there's five people running for the school board, you know, for this fall and for the primary. I think it's time for the voters to stand up and say, hey, look, we've had a lot of the same for a long time. Maybe we need new school board members, and if that doesn't work, then we have to have another conversation. We need to stop putting our children in a situation where they're involved in infighting, they're involved in politics, they're involved in whatever someone seeks in the day to talk about. We need to make sure we put our children first and foremost. We need to make sure that we help their parents teach them how to educate their children if they didn't get the education that maybe they deserved as well. So I think all in all, I think we need to make changes at the voting booth, but also it's time for the schools to get better. I think it also is a deterrent to our economic system as a whole in the city if our schools do not get better. And I only say that, wrapping up, because I have seen so many neighbors in my neighborhoods leave when their kids turn 4 or 5 and move to the suburbs or out of the area because they do not want to gamble their kids' future. And I don't think that has anything to do with teachers, but it has to do with a lot of the politics going on in the city.
Okay. Stanley Martin, issue number one that you think council is facing, especially in the next year or so?
So the wealth disparity in the East District is something that council needs to address. In the East District, we have vibrant neighborhoods like Cobbs Hill, Highland, and then we also have Beechwood, which includes the Bay Area, Clifford, Parcells. And we see that the socioeconomic disadvantages people face in part of the district really impact them long term and has been so generationally. So address some of these issues. One of the things that differentiates me from the other candidates here is I actually wrote out policy on how city council can make changes to address wealth disparity, development without displacements, and many other issues that face the East District. So if you visit iknowstanleymartin.org, you can clearly see where I stand. And to really address the wealth disparity, housing comes into play. People not having access to stable, safe, affordable housing for generations really widens that gap and causes significant destabilization. So I support universal rent control and the legislation being potentially passed at the state level. That would really afford people, tenants, the right to housing and create access to stability. And in regard to the city school district, I do not support a state takeover. I do have written out policy that mandates training for this democratically elected school board to ensure that they are set up to succeed by offering technical assistance, ways to actually implement effective transformative policy. So visit iknowstanleymartin.org to check out my policy and actually taking a deep-rooted understanding of the issues and writing out ways that city council can really address the problems.
All right, Wayne Harris, how do you feel about the number one issue facing council in the city of Rochester right now?
Well, as I said when I opened up, I chose poverty and education as the two primary foundations of my platform because of the ancillary issues that come up surrounding all of them. For example, in areas with high poverty, as we all know, crime generally tends to be higher. Gang activity occurs. Health issues begin to develop. Poor education often follows. And one of the ways, I think Bryce said it, one of the ways of making sure or addressing an issue of poverty is by empowering our families and empowering our neighbors to rise up out of that poverty line. And the best way to do that is to provide them with a good, strong foundation in education. My father was a college professor, so I came from an educational background. And, you know, I saw the importance of having teachers, get their students to critically think and to understand concepts, not just simply listen and take notes and be able to pass a test, but actually start to think about some of the content or the concepts that were being discussed. Now, one of the issues that I have is the way that we're measuring our success in the city school district. I oppose to measuring our success by how many kids we graduate, because a much starker statistic is how many kids of those that do graduate are actually able to go on to college or go on to any sort of secondary or vocational training. And the reality is they're very few. So we've been failing them for decades now, and this problem is generational in nature. We have families that have grown up in this particular environment who themselves failed going through the Rochester City School District, who have in turn had kids, and those kids are now, you know, failing going through this system. So I want us to get away from looking at this as a problem that's occurring just today. I want us to start looking at this as a problem that is generational, that has been occurring for an awful long time now, and that our families need help with, which is why I'm a firm supporter of focusing a lot of the money and attention that we do with the Rochester City School District to adult education. You know, the city of Rochester is mandated to spend $118 million per year. By the state, we're mandated to give the school district $118 million. I think that gives us a stake in exactly how our district needs to be functioning, and I think it also gives us a stake in where that money is being deployed. So if you look through the city school district's website and all of their programs, there are programs available for adult education. But I've been walking all around our district, and what I've found more often than not is that most people don't know of all the available programs that the Rochester City School District has. So one of the things I think council can do is begin to push some of those programs a little bit more and add some budgetary funding to make sure those programs are successful. Now, with regard to your question of support of state takeover, I am going to support that particular notion at this point. I know the state has the resources that unfortunately we have, but have been unable to, you know, put into practice. We've had five superintendents in 5 years. We've had a school board that has either refused or been incapable of figuring out how to get us to where we need to be as far as the success of our students. I just think it's time for us to try something different. So if the state is willing to come in for a very limited period of time to get us on the right track and then turn it back over to us, then I'm going to support that. And the only slippery slope that I'll talk about with regard to that is that we are talking about the elimination of positions, you know, that were duly elected by the people. And, you know, that's not something that I take very lightly. I think it's something that we have to be very careful of. And if we're going to do it, we have to make sure we do it right.
All right, Mary Lupien.
I believe that our city's biggest issue is our systemic poverty. But poverty isn't just one issue. It's made up of many issues. And from what I've seen in my work in the community, working with City Roots Land Trust and the Citywide Tenant Union, and living on Parcells Ave in the Beechwood neighborhood, is housing. I hear it. I heard it the last time I ran, and I hear it this time when I'm knocking on doors, is that housing is a foundational issue affecting poverty. When people don't have stable, quality, and affordable housing, it affects everything else in their life. As a teacher, I see how it affects education. I've had first graders that have gone homeless because their landlords locked them out, and they've missed school for 2 weeks because the bus doesn't take them from the homeless shelter to school. And they were just on the cusp of learning how to read. And then when they came back to school, they were behind all of their peers. I see housing affect everything else when a mother is spending 70% of her income paying for rent for a house that is not habitable conditions. And it's not, she doesn't have any stability there. So one of the things that's going on is in my neighborhood, there's a lot of displacement. The neighbors got together and were organically making our neighborhood better, but the market's responding. And so housing prices are rising and rents are rising, and our neighbors, the same neighbors that helped create that change, are being displaced. So there are some things that are going on at the state level. Actually, rent control was just passed by the state legislature and will need to be opted in on the local level. And so that's something that I support. Good cause eviction protection is something that can make an incredible difference protecting tenants. One of the main tools of this displacement is when people are on a 30-day lease, they have no protections whatsoever. They can be asked to leave their apartment, even if they're paying their rent and they take care of the place. And so good cause eviction protection would give them the same rights as if they had a year lease. That didn't pass at the state level yet, but we're still fighting, and that would also be opted in at the local level. Just to give an example, my next-door neighbor, she was paying $625 a month for her half of a house that had rodents, black mold, and literal raw sewage in the basement. We have serious issues with code enforcement and tenants actually being afraid to report their negligent landlords because they could be evicted just for making the complaint. So we need to focus on making sure that people are living in stable, quality, affordable housing, that we're holding our landlords accountable, and that we're protecting tenants in place, and that we're stabilizing neighborhoods.
And to be fair, since I asked everyone else, on the state takeover question on the city school board?
Yes. I do not support a state takeover. It's actually really scary to me that we would give up our democratic right to elect our school board members. We would be giving up our voice and allowing parents to actually have a say in our kids' education. The state doesn't have a plan. They haven't showed us anything that they would do differently. And the way that the referendum is worded is we would be giving it up to the state for no less than 5 years, but there's no end date. So,
but the mayor says the referendum is the democratic part, that if you want to give up your democratic rights, you can democratically decide to do that.
Sure, that's true. However, the referendum is non-binding and it's really an opinion poll at this point. Data nationwide has not shown that state takeovers have shown any measurable growth in outcomes. And in some cities like New Orleans, it's led to an explosion of charter schools, where they're actually left with only 5% schools in the public school system. So it could be used as a way to erode our public school system. So I support, you know, the community rolling up their sleeves and really getting involved and using their democratic right.
So Mary Lupien and Stanley Martin, who first brought up universal rent control, are saying that what we're seeing from Albany, and I think there are still some questions to be answered before we know exactly what's potentially coming, but what they're seeing is something that they, if they're on council, would want to opt into. Does anybody oppose that? Would anybody not opt in? Bryce, you would say yes, opt in to rent control?
I'd opt in, yes.
Okay.
I agree.
Okay, so we've got all five candidates agreeing on that. Let's hit a separate issue that Mary brought up, and let's go around the table on this, and it's transportation. I talk to people in the city, I live in the city of Rochester all the time, who've said for years that if you really want to start, quote-unquote, fixing poverty or ameliorating the effects of poverty, you've got to be able to have a chance for people to get to work if they don't own cars. And if you live in poverty, it's awfully hard to own a car. Well, we have a public transportation system. But it seems like for years there's been this discussion that, well, how are we going to get it set up where more people can use it? How do we either redesign a fleet or the lines or whatever happens? What power does council have? Since you brought this up, Mary, I'll start with you and we'll ask everybody this. What power does council have to make changes, and specifically, what changes do you want to see?
Sure. So people think of public transportation as RTS, the bus system. It's very much more. But it's specifically with RTS, City Council appoints one member to the board, so they do have a little bit of control there. But we have to think about transportation as much broader. How are we designing our streets? Are we designing them to be walkable and bikeable, or are we just focusing on cars? How are we attracting development? Are we incentivizing jobs to locate on bus lines? If you think about the transit center, which is right downtown, what's around it? Parking lots, parking garages. We should be clustering development and using something called transit-oriented design to cluster needed services, jobs, grocery stores, laundromats. It's the center of our transportation hub, and we should be clustering these things around them so that we're making it easier. So the bus system definitely needs to change, and there are some needed changes coming with the redesign. But the bottom line with the bus system is that we need more money. They need about a $40 million budget in order to give us the transportation system that we really deserve in Rochester.
Where should that money come from?
We need to be asking more from the federal government, from the state. But there are other things that they've done in other cities, you know, that are a little bit more controversial. Like in Philadelphia, they had a soda tax where they taxed soda to provide for the transportation systems. But I've heard it said that we can raise our sales tax a half of a penny, and just that little increase would give us the transportation system that we deserve.
Okay. Stanley Martin, same question. On the subject of transportation, what role would you play in council in changing it? What changes do you want to see?
So transportation right now is mostly privatized with RTS, and I think that's the inherent problem with transportation. Transportation, it really should be something that is publicly controlled so the public can have more of a say in how it's designed. Even with Reimagine RTS, it's focusing on downtown, as that's where it gets most of their business, but it's locking out people who are on West Avenue or other areas of the city. I work on West Avenue, and for people who seek services for recovery and substance use disorder and mental health, the Reimagine RTS transportation redesign is actually going to limit their access to bus routes, and the increase in possibly paying a little bit more to use the accessibility routes is something that people cannot afford. So this decision to reimagine, though there were public forums, a lot of people in the public don't feel like their opinions were heard. And this is what comes when we privatize things that should be public institutions. On city council, with only being able to elect one board member to the RTS board, I personally don't think that's enough. But once again, since it's private, there are limitations in what we can actually do. So I stand for really rethinking transportation and who owns public transportation and how it's distributed to our community.
Okay. Wayne Harris.
So, you know, it's an interesting concept because I recall when, you know, in years past before the transit center was built, the bus lineup occurred on Main Street going in both directions, and there was a very specific time schedule as to when people needed to get downtown to catch the lineup. And, you know, I remember as a kid being, you know, well, we have 5 minutes, we've got to get there before those buses take off. So I know that the authority, the Rochester Regional Transit Authority, has been working hard for a number of years to figure out the most efficient way of moving everyone around this region, not just the city of Rochester. I guess as far as what council can do, I am always going to lean towards bringing our community into the equation and finding out what works for them. Right now, RTS does go out to some of the employment areas in and around the county. We do go out to the malls. But I agree with Mary and I agree with Stanley in that it's not enough at this point. I'm concerned that in this particular conversation, council's not going to have a great deal of leverage to use with RTS, but I am going to be in favor of sort of taking a look at what's going on, seeing if we can come up with something that's going to be the most efficient. I'm not sure I'm going to be agreeable to a new tax for it. I agree that we should start leveraging the federal government. I agree that we should start leveraging the state. But beyond that, I'm not sure. I don't know if there's enough, at least for me, I don't know if there's enough data right now to talk about exactly what's going to be necessary. It took an awful lot of work to get us to the transit center. And, you know, I always hate to fall back on, you know, when I was down there, but I recall when Midtown Mall was functioning and strong and vibrant, and the decision was made to hub all the students from in and around the area right there in the middle of downtown, and the changes it created into the Midtown area. And I know that the transit authority or the transit center right now partly came about because of the students that were there and needing to move them out into the various schools because they wanted to keep hubbing them there in Center City. So I guess right now it's time for us to get together, kind of regroup, talk about this, figure out what works best for everyone. Possibly it could be part of the conversations with regard to community schooling, but you know, I can say this, that at this point, I think council's main position is going to be leading that charge of the conversation.
Okay, Bryce?
Thank you. I think a huge issue really comes up with our system being private is they change schedules whenever they'd like. They change routes whenever they'd like. They change bus stops all the time. I've talked to many people who, quite frankly, are very nervous of using the bus because you hear, I cannot tell you how many times in the last few months I've heard of somebody getting stabbed at the transit center. That's not something that people really want to hear if they have to go to the transit center. There's a lot of fights. I know there's a security guard that was stabbed. There was a patron that was stabbed on separate occasions. It's just something where we really have to make sure that people feel safe when they use our public transportation as well. I think it goes further than that. We obviously need to have a strong public transportation. You know, some areas like Detroit and Phoenix, for example, have done very well with putting some light rail in as well to get to certain hubs of their cities and have really helped their neighborhoods and get their citizens to where they need to go. But going further than that, I think, quite frankly, it's an economic issue. We have a lot of businesses that want to put call centers. They want to put different businesses in Henrietta. They want to put them in Victor. They want to put them in Fairport. They want to put office parks in Greece. You know, that's great for the suburbs, and I don't disparage them for that. But the issue is we need to work on our public transportation. But I think as city council, one thing that we can truly do is work with these businesses to try to bring in jobs right here in the city of Rochester. Not only does it help our tax base that we've lost from Xerox moving out, Kodak leaving, Bausch Shalom cutting back. We have a lot of big businesses that have left Rochester over the last couple of decades or have definitely wound down. I think we really need to focus on trying to get some of these jobs right back here in the city. And I think that will really help with our public transportation because a lot of these people struggle to get, let's say, Victor's a 15, 20-minute car ride. Imagine how long someone has to sit on a bus for to get to Eastview Mall to go to work or go to a business park in Victor or a business park in Henrietta. When I worked for the Verizon Wireless Call Center years back when I was in college, you know, that was a struggle for a lot of people even then where, you know, I'm lucky I got here on time because either the bus didn't come when it was supposed to, it got caught up, you know, there was a fight on the bus, there's something going on to disparage that. I think it's very important that we bring jobs right back here in the city, like I said, and I think it will really help with our public transportation issue because I think a lot of residents will be able to get to their jobs a lot easier and be able to get back to their children at night.
Okay, Michael Geraci.
Yep, thanks. So a couple points on this. I think number one is just to point out that as a city council person and as an advocate, you need to be in tune with the plight of your neighbors and those in your community. And, you know, knowing that such a high percentage of folks in our city do not have easy access or ready access to fresh food, vegetables, toiletries, basic things, they can't simply, you know, hop on a bus or hop in their car and go to the store and get that. So we need to understand that and obviously have that as a major consideration when looking into and considering any development in our neighborhoods. And that's why I'm all for responsible development within the character of our neighborhoods, supporting small businesses, mom-and-pop shops, and markets that can help to bring some of those into the communities, some of those things I just mentioned, you know, access to food and necessities into the community. Now, I also want to mention that I do like the direction I think that we're headed with respect to making our city more bikeable and walkable and really beautifying the streets that way. As a city council person, I would only support development that continues to grow that. So, for instance, the proposal for the new police substation over in Goodman, that's going to change about 0.9, about a mile of the street over on Main. And those proposals all include, in one form or another, some sort of bike lane. And I would seek to continue that all the way down Main and to all of our streets. I think it makes our city more approachable. It helps to connect our neighborhoods. And that, again, is a method of transportation that is starting to take off more in our community. It's certainly going to take, you know, it's going to be an adjustment of the mind for people to, you know, really fully come on board with safe bicyclists and respecting that. But we're heading in the right direction. And on council, again, I would only support responsible development that continues with that trend.
You heard Michael Geraci, an attorney with Geraci Law Offices. You heard Bryce Miller, president of the Northeast Neighbors United and vice chair of the North Winton Village Association. Wayne Harris, retired deputy chief of the Rochester Police Department. Stanley Martin, project director for the Center for Community Alternatives and director at the Safer Monroe Area Reentry Team. And Mary Lupien, an activist and a teacher in the Rochester City School District. Five candidates, one seat in the East District for Rochester City Council open after the retirement from council of Elaine Spall, who has held that seat for the better part of 11 years. Let's get our only break of the hour, and we're right back with them next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, we sit down with the founder and president of Humans for Education. It's a Rochester-based charitable organization that has its focus in rural Kenya, building schools and, they hope, a sustainable health clinic that can serve 2,000 families in an area where drought and disease are prevalent. How is Rochester going to sustain this? We'll talk about it next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's go ahead and grab our first phone call. It's Calvin in Rochester. Go ahead, Calvin.
Hi, Evan. Hi, panel. I agree with most of the candidates who are running in terms talking about housing. I know Mary talked about that, and Stanley specifically mentioned about public transportation. I do take public transportation. I agree that our city has a long ways to go in terms of making public transportation viable for everyone, including the conversation about bicycling. But I just didn't, I heard, I don't remember his name, one of the candidates talking about safety. And I know that there have been some instances, very targeted instances of some shootings or stabbings at the transit center. But overall, I take the bus pretty much every day. Generally speaking, I feel very safe. The instances of crime have been very much like person to person or people who knew each other. There is police stationed among the transit center and more security guards in the last few months. So I don't want it to seem like the transit center is not safe. I know that that's just and I only touch on that because the media sometimes creates a rhetoric that the city in general is not safe, especially how the media covers shootings and crimes in general. And I know that there's a stigma against RTS and using the transit, which I grew up having, that the transit is for people who are poor or people who don't have a lot of money. And I feel that in terms of messaging, that's still something that city council, whomever, has struggled with. There just isn't, because of the infrastructure and lack of progress, the bus is more or less a lot of times, and this is just very anecdotal, people who have less income. And we don't see as many people who are young professionals like myself being challenged to take the bus because it just doesn't work for us. Mm-hmm. So while we can talk about the improvements that we still need, I don't want us to indict the bus further in our conversations about that.
Calvin, thanks for that. That was Bryce Miller, who is running for the seat here. So, Bryce, were you painting too dark a picture of public transportation? Do you think that was unfair, your comments?
Well, I want to make it very clear. I don't want to disparage people from taking the bus. The point I was trying to make on this is we have had some instances, and I want to make sure that, you know, that as a city we are diligent, and as a police department they're diligent in making sure everybody feels safe, because my concern is if there continues to be more media coverage on any potential issues, it could hinder people from wanting to take the bus. It wasn't my intent to scare people from taking the bus. My intent was I want to make sure everybody feels safe taking the bus, and it was something that has been brought to my attention talking to some people going door to door, that it was a concern of theirs, and I want to make sure that is something that I feel, when I was asked as a city council person what I can do, I don't think I have a whole lot of control, as much as I would love to, over RGRTA. I want to have dialogue and work with them. But I think as a city councilman, I can definitely make sure that I have a little bit more control of how people feel when they go downtown.
Well, one of the questions that kind of is tied to that is the question of what the police are doing there and generally how we interact with the police as a community. Now, Mary Alupian brought up earlier this hour the question of police accountability, of which council has had a lot to say. We have a retired deputy chief with RPD, and that's Wayne Harris. Are you satisfied that Rochester Police, if and when an officer does wrong, is held appropriately accountable?
So I spent 4 years with the professional standards section, which is internal affairs. Well, actually, let me do two things. First, with regard to the transit center, because I was part of the conversation when the transit center first became went into existence. When it first opened up, we did have a number of incidents that occurred with some youth down there that were fighting, with some assaults that had occurred, and the Rochester Police Department took some very appropriate steps to put officers down there. But we went beyond that. We actually met with the city school district. We met with RTS. We came up with a good plan of how to continue to move students through the transit center and alleviate some of the congestion and some of the tensions that were going on there. So, you know, that's been an ongoing process to make sure that occurs. Now, unfortunately, Incidents do occur, but I can agree with Bryson that the, and also Calvin, the incidents that occur either on buses or in that transit center have been few and far between. But you're not wrong in saying that when these things occur, the media picks up on it and they start to cover that a little bit more than they cover anything else. And it gives the impression that—
I worked for commercial television news. I agree with that.
Yeah, so that's just an unfortunate reality. Now, with regard to officers and how they are addressed, I've worked in the law enforcement industry for 30 years. Both at an executive level. As I said a moment ago, I spent 4 years working in internal affairs. I was a research fellow at the Police Foundation in Washington, which is a think tank designed to work on best practices in the law enforcement industry. And I've been a part of Noble now for about 10 years, rising to their national executive board. And I can tell you that for the Rochester Police Department, they go very, very far in making sure that they're doing stuff right. Now, that's also true with most police departments around the country. We do have officers that have made mistakes and that have been held accountable for them. The most recent conviction of Michael Sipple is an example of that. I can tell you that as a law enforcement executive, we have to hold officers accountable to what they do. When I was on the job and I had the occasion to address, you know, individuals publicly, whether it was in a group or whether it was, in some sort of setting, I would often start out by saying that I was accountable to them and that they were accountable to me. And collectively, we were accountable to making sure that the health of the city of Rochester was as strong as it could possibly be. So I'm okay with being held accountable. But the definition of community policing, which is the format of policing that the city of Rochester has embraced, if you take a look at the city's plan, even the plan 2034, they speak a lot about community policing. Community policing can also be described as relational policing. In order for it to work properly, there has to be a relationship. There has to be a cooperative nature between the city of the city and the police department that serves them. And absent that, you tend to develop mistrust. You tend to develop fear of one another.
And I don't think I understand if you're endorsing a change, though.
So I am, I guess. If you're asking me if I'm supporting council's proposal for police accountability, I am not. All right, because fundamentally it's punitive in nature. It eliminates the opportunity for real growth and understanding. It makes it very, very hard for the relationship that's necessary for good policing to occur, to actually happen. I'm more in favor of, and I actually wrote this to one of the multitude of people that were asking us to write some stuff down recently. I would rather see a board made up of citizens with representation from every aspect of this community, as well as law enforcement, that is able to take a look at a number of things. One, how the Rochester Police Department is trained. Before I left the department, I put something called the Police Training Accountability Board together. The Police Training Advisory Board together. I populated that committee myself, and I chose people from as diverse a group as I possibly could, from people that were vehemently opposed to the Rochester Police Department and policing in general to people that were all the way supportive of them. And I asked them to do two things. One, to after us laying out all of our training, all of our policies, all of our procedures, all of our rules and regulations, I asked them to do two things. One, advocate for us in the community when questions of our training came up. And two, be ambassadors from the community to make recommendations as to exactly what the community thought we should be trained in as a Rochester Police Department. Now, the one thing I will say this before, because I know I don't have a whole lot of time, and this is one of those issues that we could go into all day long.
I suspect we could.
One thing that I want people to understand, and this more than anything is critically important. Everyone in the world thinks they know law enforcement. They think they know what policing truly is. And unfortunately, they don't. And they don't because this industry, the law enforcement industry, has never in their entire history gone out of their way to educate the public as to who they are, what it is that they do, their history, because their history is colorful. And I'm using colorful because this is a family radio station and I don't want to get into too much detail that people already know. We need to go that extra step. Part of this solution has to be an educational aspect where the ignorance gap between the community and the police departments is erased. Law enforcement has to get to know the communities that they serve. The communities have to understand what true law enforcement really is.
All right, so I got to let others jump in here. Mary, you raised it first. Let's go around the table. Go ahead, Mary.
So going back to the bus station, you know, we do hear in the media things skewed, that it's unsafe, that people are getting stabbed. But what we don't hear about is the police presence at the bus station harassing people of color. People are, you know, if they don't respond to the police officer, where they're going, you know, the time that they're leaving. I've witnessed some things down there. You know, I've taken the bus at different points in my time here. I witnessed a young woman of color with her arm in the sling being wrestled out of the station because she wouldn't give an answer of where she was going. And as last time I checked, we live in a democracy where we don't have to account for where we're going. But there's a perception of, especially young people of color, that they're going to cause a problem. And really, they're just minding their own business. And so we also have to understand that over-policing the transit center may not be the answer. And in terms of the Police Accountability Board, I strongly support the legislation that's coming to a referendum ballot in November. So guys, make sure you get out there and vote, because it gives the community a sense of control in assuring accountability. The police have been policing themselves for way too long, and they're the only section of our society that isn't held to the same standard of law as the rest of us. If, you know, things I've witnessed in my neighborhood, actually living on Parcells Avenue, really helped me understand structural racism precisely from witnessing the police interaction with my neighbors of color. The disrespect that is shown next door to me, two women were fighting, and the police showed up as they were called, and the police officer got out of the car, saw them, said, "I hope you guys kill each other," got back in the car and left. They would never say that to me. Where's the accountability? And so I don't think they've been doing that, you know, and I wonder with Christopher Pate and the indictment that just happened, I wonder what that would have happened 2 years ago, or if this isn't seen as a way to prove that the police are actually holding each other accountable.
So you're going to support the council proposal.
I
am. Okay. Stanley, you're going to support the council proposal.
Absolutely. But I do want to comment on transportation. Bryce's comment was inherently flawed in the sense that he's talking about something that doesn't represent his experiences, and using this radio station platform to further create this narrative that, you know, spaces that are mostly occupied by Black and brown people are inherently dangerous or violent based on a couple of things. So I have to address that and really comment on how we have to be careful in who we select to represent us and ensure that they are people who have the lived experience of riding the bus or knowing people who ride the bus and rely on that form of transportation to get places. When it comes to the Police Accountability Board, I am on the executive committee of the Police Accountability Board Alliance. So I've worked closely with Ted Pastorwanda, Matt DeLaus, AJ Derwin to pass this legislation through council. And we are actively working on a campaign to ensure that we see this through in November and true accountability involving public oversight and discipline is included in how we address policing and misconduct in our city.
Okay, Mike Geraci.
Yep, thanks. Follow up on that. I think Stanley makes a good point about selecting individuals to represent us that really can understand and put themselves in the place of the folks they serve. I live in the city my whole life. I rode an RTS bus to school, and so I have been on an RTS bus. With respect to police accountability, I think I bring an interesting perspective, or I hope to, in that my professional career started in 2012 at a firm, Trevette Cristo, that represents a lot of labor unions, and I represent labor unions, including teachers, I still represent them, firemen, and police. Okay, so I spent time representing police officers who were facing discipline. I also am a criminal defense attorney, and I've done that since 2012. So every day I represent individuals who come into contact with the police. And we have to understand that, again, you need to take both of those positions into account when we are proposing legislation, when we're just trying to weed through The issues, because you have to understand everyone, even those that you necessarily don't agree with.
Do you like the legislation?
I don't. I do not support it. I think as is, it will not pass legal muster. I believe that it oversteps the bounds of our state and city charter and constitution. And it also, again, it goes outside the confines of the union contract, which does not allow for discipline to be made in the hands of civilians.
20 seconds, Bryce. You're going to support that legislation?
No, I am not, and I agree with Michael that it does go against the contracts. Also, I want to go back to the transportation really quickly. Part of putting neighbors first is not always saying the popular thing. This was not my opinion. This is what had gone from the neighbors telling me. As far as the police accountability, though, I do fully support oversight with the police, but I do not support the accountability the way it stands at this point.
All right, so two of the five supporting that legislation, and some differences, some agreement, and a lot of issues work through. You can search out all of them on various platforms. You're probably going to find them on Facebook. Google them. Keep reading. Keep listening to all of the candidates you heard this hour for City Council. One seat, five candidates. Michael Geraci, Wayne Harris, Mary Lupien, Stanley Martin, Bryce Miller, thanks to all of you for being here together. And I wish we had both hours, but thanks to all of them. I'm sure you do too. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
June 25th is the upcoming primary in Rochester. Short break, more connections coming up.